The Eddie B. Sit edition and audio series of the Talmud Bavli.
Masechet Ketubot has been dedicated by our dear friend Mr. Elliot Shasho. Hashem Yishmineu V'Hayehu. May the zikut of the limud of Masechet Ketubot stand for him that he should have Be'azat Hashem, Hashanah Tovah Mborechet, Osher Ve'osher Ve'chavod, Shalom Bayit V'Hatzlacha Bechol Ma'aseh Yadav. And Be'azat Hashem, may he continue to be a supporter of Torah and all holy projects. Amen. Daf Ayin Tet. Today's daf is being studied. The Anun Shmat Abraham Ben Esther Ruach Hashem Terhenu Begin Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied. Refuah Shlema Yosef Ben Sarah Vegam Sarah Bat Rachel. Inna Refan Lahem Betoch She'ar Chole Amo Yisrael. Amen. We begin today's daf on Ayin Het Amud Bet. 17 lines from the bottom. Quote from our Mishnah. Mishnah said, Elu ve'elu modim. We looked at our Mishnah. Once a lady gets married and she inherits property from when she's married, so everybody agrees that she has no rights to sell those properties. And if she sells those properties, the husband has rights to remove them from the likuchot. The explanation is, because we're talking about over here, Nichse Midlog are properties that the wife maintains the principal, but the husband is able to eat perot, is able to eat the fruit. And therefore, once already the properties came in after the marriage, where the husband already has jurisdiction over his wife, so everybody agrees that those properties cannot be sold, and if they are sold, he can take them back. So the Gemara says, Lema tanina l'takanat Usha. Let us say that our Mishnah is a support for the takanat that they made in Usha. The Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hanina be'Usha. That's where the Sanhedrin sat. Hitkinu ha'isha. They made a takanat that what? Ha'isha shemachra b'nichse milog b'chaye ba'ala. A lady that sold her nichse milog while her husband was still alive. Umeta. And then she died. Habaral motzi miyad alikuchot. That the husband is able to go to the likuchot and remove them. So we want to say our Mishnah is saying a similar thing. That the husband has rights to go to the likuchot. That supports the takanat Usha that said, when the husband is married and then the lady sells nechse milog and then she dies, he can go and remove the likuchot from the likuchot. So the Gemara says, no. Our Mishnah is not really based on takanat Usha. Matnitin bechayea ulperot. Our Mishnah is limited that he can only go to the likuchot when she's alive, and even when he goes to the likuchot, he can only go to them to claim perot, but he cannot take the principal from the likuchot. That's a new understanding, the way we're understanding our Mishnah. That which we said that the husband can go to the likuchot and take it back, he cannot take back the principal. The principal was sold. She can sell the principal technically. When she can sell it, the sale is a sale. When he's going to the likuchot, he's only going to get back perot. And according to the Mishnah, that's only when she is alive. Takanat Usha, the rabbis later on in Takanat Usha, they added to the Mishnah and they said, Bigufa shel karka ulachal mita. They came along and said that not only does it have to be the perot he can claim back, he can even claim back the actual karka itself, and not only during her lifetime, but even after our death. So the Va'al Mishnah was talking about at one point of the Takana, the rabbis extended the Takana, that the husband has more rights, even after death, even to take back the ikar of the karka. Mishnah continues. Rabbi Shimon Cholek ben Nechasim. Now we learned at the end of the Mishnah an interesting shitav Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon held like this. It depends what type of Nechasim, which means certain Nechasim the wife has the right to sell, and certain Nechasim she doesn't have the right to sell. And what are these Nechasim? There's Nechasim Yidu'im and Nechasim She'enam Yidu'im. Nechasim Yidu'im means properties that literally were known, and Nechasim She'enam Yidu'im that were not known. So the Gemara says, what does it mean known, not known? So the Gemara says, Elohim Yidu'im Ve'elohim She'en Yidu'im. What is this? Yidu'in, not Yidu'in? Amar Rabbi Yosef ben Bihanina, Yidu'in mekarkae. Yidu'in means land. It seems land is well known. And the logic would be that since people know about transactions of land, the husband must have known that this land is coming to his wife, and therefore in his mind, he's marrying her with intention to eat perot from this real estate that he knows she's going to get, and therefore she has no rights to sell it. She'enam yidu'in metaltelin. And enam yidu'in is metaltelin, movables, which the Gemara assumes over here, the husband really doesn't know. He could hide those from the husband. And therefore, since he doesn't know that they're coming to her, so he doesn't put in his mind that he's marrying her on condition, that he's able to eat the fruit from these things. Therefore, she's able to sell them. Stuff that he could hide from the husband, she doesn't have to show perot. She doesn't have to give perot. But stuff that she can't hide, she has to give perot. And what's the stuff? Karka, yeah. Metatli, no. Ve'rabbi Yohanan amar elu ve'elu yudu'inim. No. Karka and metaltelin, that's considered already known. Husband knows about both those things. Therefore, she cannot sell not karka and not metaltelin. The elu en she'enam yidu'in. You know what enam yidu'in is? Kol sheyoshevet kam v'nafula nechassim b'mdinat hayam. That a Yerusha fell to her from overseas, which means the husband doesn't know about it. That's what it means, enam yidu'in. Which means, whatever it was, which means it's out of the area. And therefore, since he doesn't know about it, he's not so mechdat when he's getting married that he wants to eat perot from these items. Therefore, those items she doesn't have to claim, so to speak. And therefore, she's able to she's able to sell them. That's the point, because the husband was never so mechdat on these items; they were not known to him. Tanya and Amechim and Bright will support this. Elu hen she'enam yudurin, kol sheyoshevet kan ve'naflu nechasim b'mdinat hayam. Good, so that's the last shita of Rabbi Shimon, that sometimes the sale is void. That's on property, like I said, that was known to the husband. That means Yerusha that fell locally, he hears about it. But she'ekin Yerusha that falls from far off, he doesn't know about it, therefore she can't sell it. Comes to Gemara now and says, Hahi itita. There was a lady. Debaya de tabrehinu lenichseh megabra. She wanted to conceal or hide her property from her husband, which means she's getting married. She doesn't want the husband to eat perot. So she wants to somehow divert or conceal her property from the husband. So what did she do? Kadvinu libarta. She wrote a shtar, so to speak, gifting the property to her daughter. So now already she gave it to the daughter, and now when she goes into the marriage, she doesn't got the husband doesn't eat perot. Now what happened? In Seba, she got married. The igarsha. Now she got divorced. Okay. Now what happened? Atay lekamed Rav Nachman. So now they came in front of Rav Nachman because the daughter is claiming, well, it's my property. You gave me, you gifted it to me. I have the start, and now you got divorced. The mother's claiming back. Hey, listen, I want back that property. I only gave it to you as a diversion, so my husband will not benefit from it. But I didn't really gift it to you. It was a ploy. So they came in front of Rav Nachman. Kara'er Rav Nachman nishtara. Rav Nachman ripped up the shtar. He told the daughter, you have no claims. Your mother only did this as a tactic, and therefore you really don't have a kinyan on it. She only did it in order that the husband doesn't get rights. So therefore, goes back to your mother. Azad Rav Anan nekamed de Mor Ogba. Rav Anan went in front of Mor Ogba. Mor Ogba was the Abedin. So he tells Mor Ogba, Hazeh Mor, look at what Nachman Hakla'a. Nachman the Hakla'a, Nachman the farmer, or Nachman the one that's not the peasant, the one that's not fluent. How's he ripping up starot? Lady comes with a star, and what? He just rips up the star? What kind of business is this over here? Amale emale izi. Tell me, my beloved one, Gufa, or Hashuv one, Gufa de Ovda Hechi Hava. Tell me what the story was. What do you mean? He just ripped up a star. Give me the details to the story. I have to know what was going on over here. Hache v'Hechi Hava. He told him, listen, this happened. Lady wanted to get married. She didn't want the husband to know about the property, so she wrote a star to her daughter. And then after she got divorced, she came back. The whole story was told over. Amale star mevrachat ka amartecha? What are you talking about? You're talking about a star mevrachat? You're talking about a star that's written in order to conceal properties. Hachi Amar of Haninai, but Idi Amar Shemuel Moreh Hora'ani. He Shemuel said that I got permission from the Resh Galut to say halachot, I got permission to say the following halacha. Im yavo shtar mavrachat liyadi, ikra'inu. If a shtar mavrachat comes to my hands, I'm going to tear it up. Because it's really not given over as a kinyan, it's given over. Stam is a loophole, exactly. So he did right, Rav Nachman. So comes Gemara and says, Amar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Rava tells Rav Nachman, Ta'ama mai. What's the logic? Let's understand why it's not a legal transaction over here. Because you can assume a guy's not going to just write over his property to somebody else and give him all his property. And therefore, you see he's doing it as a tactic. He's not going to write to divert it from the husband. What, you just write a start and give your property to a stranger? So he says, if that's the logic, I could argue that maybe that only applies to a stranger he doesn't want to give his property to. But maybe when he writes it to his daughter, maybe he wants his daughter to have it. It's his family. So maybe when she wrote it to the daughter, it's not a stranger. Maybe you could argue that the kinyan is a kinyan. Kibra says, no, afidu hache, bimkom birata nafsha adifala. Doesn't matter. When it comes to the person, even if it's his own daughter, he comes first in his mind. And therefore, he's not giving all his assets and writing it to his daughter. Therefore, it's called a shtar mavrachat. The lady didn't mean to gift it to the daughter. It's a tactic. And therefore, the Rabbi Nachman ripped it up. Metibe, the Gemara has a question. Similar case. A lady wants to hide the property from her husband. Ketza di osa. What does she do? Kotevet shtar pasim la'achirim. Shtar pasim is shtar piusim. A shtar of appeasement. When she comes to the guy and says, do me a favor. I need you to, do me a favor. I need you to accept this property. In order, to hide it from the husband. So she has to, appease the guy to be involved in this situation. So it's called the Shtar Pasim Laharim. Devrei Rabban Shimon Gamliel. V'achamim omrim. Hachamim say no. Ratza mitzahik ba. If that person can come along and tell the lady that what? I'm not giving it to you back. Which means, if you write a Shtar like that, I'm giving you a Shtar Mavrahat, then you go back to okay, and I got divorced. Can I have my property back? I'll see you later. You have a shtar here. It's my property. And see you later. If you write the shtar like that, according to Hachamim, it's a kinyan. Until you write it in the following way. Ad shetichtov lo, you have to write it like this. Mehayom uchle she'irtze. Well, let's talk about how you're writing it. We'll say it like this. I'm writing you this shtar over here. And it's from now. It's kinyan is from now. When I want, when I will, when will she will? If let's say the husband comes along and says, "Hey, I want a piece of that those karka," then she says at that point, "I will," and therefore retroactively all those properties belong to the third party, and therefore the husband doesn't get anything. Now, if the husband doesn't say anything at the end when she gets divorced, she can come along and say, I don't will, so retroactively nothing ever happens, you get her property back. Now, it doesn't give an insurance this for 100% from her, because she can get ruined. Once already she says, I will, that's it, and then she loses her property. But the point is, according to Hakami, it has to be written like this. It cannot just be written in Shtar Mavrachat. It has to be written with that condition where she says, if I will this to happen, this transaction, it's effective from now. Now, when will she will it? If the husband gets hold of the fact that there's a property over there, she don't want him to get the pinot. So just come along and say, I will it. Well, that's going to go to the other one. But so you see over here that according to Shmuel came along and said, I have a tradition, we rip up these shtarot. What do you mean you rip up the shtarot? Sounds like movie here, unless you write it like this, you don't rip it up. And unless you write it like this, it sounds like it holds. So comes again what it says. Tama dechadve leache. The only reason why it works is because you wrote it like this, like the Hakamim said. But if you didn't write it like that, kanini lokeyah. The lokeyah is gone there. So how could Shmuel just give me a blanket statement and say, "Now, whenever these things came to me, we just ripped them up." Amar avzera la kashya. Habichula habimiksata. Depends how much you're writing over. If a guy's writing over all his assets, it's clear that it's a shtar avracha, and he doesn't mean to write over all his assets. which wants to write over all the assets to somebody else. So therefore, you could assume that the whole thing is just a loophole that he's trying to use, and therefore the kinyan is not by the lokayah. But if you're writing part of the assets over, also then already it's got to be written in the right way, because the person will give over maybe some of his assets. It has to be written like the gibbar assets. So it depends, all or nothing. Now the gibbar has one major question. The obvious question. So the case, well, let's say he's writing over part of the nechassim, right? According to Shmuel, and Shmuel's saying what? Lokeya doesn't own it. It's a loophole. It's just a diversion tactic. So who's it really belong to? The husband, because this whole thing is does not halal. So if the husband owns it, he should be able to eat perot. Why? What do you tell me over there? This works. How could this work? Lema'aseh, according to the deen, this diversionary tactic does not work, because really you're saying that from the fact that after the divorce she can go back to her daughter, and the rabbis will say the whole thing was a hoax, rip up the shtar, you get back the property, so that means it was hers the whole time, the wives. And then when she got married, really the husband should have been allowed to eat the perot. How are we saying over there this works, the husband shouldn't eat perot? Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Asa'um kinchasim she'en yidu'im lebaal v'alibad Rabbi Shimon. Didn't we just turn a quote to Rabbi Shimon that properties that are not known to the husband, she doesn't have to give him perot? Because when he married al dat, she doesn't have these items. So this situation is considered like nechasim she'enam yidu'im. It's like assets that are not well known, because she covered them up. And then what's the rule according to Rabbi Shimon? The husband didn't know about these items at the time he got married. He's not so mechdat, therefore he doesn't get perot. So this is similar. This is working with Rabbi Shimon's logic. She went before the marriage. She hid these properties. He never knew about them when he got married. Now even though he found out after, as long as you didn't know going into the marriage these properties existed, so it's okay. Even though technically you didn't mekneh them over to anybody. I don't have to be mekneh them over technically to anybody. Which means this is like the same sevara of Rabbi Shimon. He didn't know about them. It has the same status, and therefore the husband cannot eat the perot. She right before the Mishnah explains, "Kinechasim she'en yidurin, shale al menat she'enam she'lan nasa, desabur she'matana gemura." Exactly, which means he's thinking that this tactic worked. When he's getting married to her, he knows he wrote all the assets to her daughter. In his brain, he doesn't know that the shtar doesn't work and it's really nothing. In his mind, he thinks they're gone. So therefore, it has the same status of nechassim shenam yidurim, and therefore he cannot come. When he's marrying her, he's not marrying her al dat that these properties are indeed his. That's the way that she's fixing it up. That the Mishnah comes along and says. Now let's review the law of Nechseh Midlog. A lady brings in, let's say to the marriage, or let's say even after the marriage, let's say she gets a windfall profit, she gets money. Now the husband gets the right to enjoy the fruit of that money. Now money itself has no fruit, which means if you just start giving the husband money, eventually the principal is going to wear its way out. Halakha says that you only have to give the husband fruit in the case where the principal is able to remain. Right, you can only give the interest, but if the principal remains, when you start giving him money, there's not going to be any more interest, there's not going to be any more principal for the lady. So what they do is in all these cases is, they take the monies, the movables, and they buy karka. Mm-hmm. Karka is a stable item, real estate, and now he starts eating the fruit of the real estate. So the principal stays. Generally speaking, real estate holds its value, doesn't depreciate, and therefore that's what the Mishnah is going to discuss in all these cases. When she brings in movables, the movables are sold, karka is bought, she holds onto the karka, and he eats the perot. All right, now we're going to discuss that. Gemara says, Mishnah, Naflula kesafim, let's say money is fell to her, yilakach bahem karka, so they buy real estate, du okel perot. Okay, and he eats the perot. Perot etilushin min hakarka. Okay, let's say she brings in perot. Mamash perot. Perot that are plucked from the ground already. So that's like money. So therefore, you like, what are you going to give the guy? Perot? If you're going to give the guy to eat the perot, there's going to be nothing left for. So therefore, yilakach ben karka. Again, sell the perot, buy a piece of land, vihu ochel perot. Okay, now we discuss the following case. Perot amechubarim bekarka. How do you look at perot that are attached to the ground? Which means she inherited a field and there was fruit in the field already, attached to the ground. How do you look at those fruit over here? So the Bimi Eid is going to say that these fruit that are attached to the ground are considered like ground. and therefore it's not considered perot. So therefore, how do you evaluate now? What are you going to do? So Yavran says, Amar b'meir, shamin ota kamei yafa b'perot. You calculate, how much is the field's value now that it has perot on it? Let's say the field with the perot on it is appreciated, it's worth $1,000. B'kamei yafa b'lo perot. And what is it worth, let's say, if these perot would not be on the field? Let's say it would be only worth 800. So therefore, what happens? Umotar. So with the extra, the difference of saying 200, yilakach ba'en karka. He buys a piece of land. Vehu ochel perot. She gets the karka and he eats the perot. Which means, according to this, the perot is considered the wife's, and therefore, but it's not considered his. He doesn't eat from those fruits since they're attached to the ground and they came in to the marriage, or they came into her with the fruit already on the field. So when the fruit are already on the field, according to the Bimeir, it's field. And therefore it's considered a kark, but he gets to eat perot. So how is he going to eat the perot? So therefore, on with those items, you calculate what the field was worth now, what the field was worth without them, buy karka with it, she gets the karka, and the husband gets the perot. Achamim say no. Hamihubarim the karka shelo. They say the opposite. When the field, let's say, comes into position with perot on it, those perot already... It's because the Bimi's logic is like this. It doesn't go when it fell. Which is according to the Bimi, he said, it fell when the perot was on the field. It's considered karka. Hakim say no. It goes not in whose possession when it fell. It goes who plucked them off the field. At the time of the plucking, who's plucking them off the field? They're already married. Already the husband's plucking them off the field. And therefore it goes from the time that you harvest them. At the time that you harvest them already, it's in the husband's possession, and therefore those fruit are considered perot. So therefore, the field that says perot on it, he could pick the fruit immediately. I mean, those fruit already considered his. But tilushin, if they're not on the ground, they're regular tilushin. So they are. It's considered like money. And if you sell the fruit and you buy a piece of land, that's the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Hakamim. How do you look at fruit that's attached to the ground? Look at that sheep, please. That she says, Shamin ota. The kasabar, according to Rabbi Meir, he holds, Ma shegadal birshuto havi perot. According to Rabbi Meir, only stuff that grew in the husband's jurisdiction are considered perot. Uma shelo gadal birshuto. Like this case over here, didn't grow in his possession. It was inherited to the wife with the perot on the field already. Havi keren lefichach ma shedemei akarka yekarim akshav b'shvil tevuazu. The fact that the field appreciated as a result of this fruit that's on it, sarich liten ladamim, he gives a money for that. V'yiknu b'em karka by his field v'yochalu perotea. V'chamim say no. Even these fruits that did not grow in his possession, she just inherited it with the fruit on it. Torah perot netnu. It has a din of perot. Since she has a field, the field is considered a principle, this is considered a fruit, and by him eating the fruit, it doesn't ruin the principle, and therefore he can eat just to start eating from the fruit that's on the field itself. Rabbi Shimon says, now Rabbi Shimon actually, seemingly, is just going to repeat the shita of the Hakamim in a flowery language. That what? That the husband gets the fruit that's on the field when the lady inherited. It's considered the husband's. Now how's he going to say that? He says the following. Makom shiyafe kocho b'chnisata, which means if the advantage is to him, yafe kocho, advantage husband, when it comes in, meaning when the fruit was on the field and it came into the marriage like that, it was inherited like that, advantage husband, because those fruit are considered food that the husband eats, so it's, but he is weakened on the way out, which means in the case of divorce, and now those fruit are attached on the field, he doesn't get them. That belongs to the husband. That belongs to the wife. Because the logic of Hakamim and this shita is what? They're his, because it goes in the time of the plucking. And therefore, when they pluck them, they become his. But she'ekin, when the divorce happens, they weren't plucked it. Therefore, it goes back to the wife. Now, makom shorako b'chnisata. Now, in a place where, let's say, his advantage is weakened on the entry. For example, let's say she inherited fruit that are plucked already. So that's considered hers, which means he doesn't have rights to those fruit yet. She has to sell them and buy karka, right? But let's say she inherited just loose fruit. So he's weakened in his power. Yafik kohobisiata. But on the divorce, he is strengthened. Why? Because these raw fruits are their fruit now. And therefore he'll get those fruit on the way out. Kids, I think he explains it. Perot ha-mechubarim le-karka, if the perot are attached to the ground when she gets to the field, b'chnisata shelo. Right? And during the marriage, when the cup lands by her, he eats the fruits. Right? Once he picks them, goes after the picking. Whose possession were the fruits at the time of the picking? His. U'b'tziyata shela. But if she gets divorced and these fruits are still on the field, he didn't pick them. If it goes back to the wife, the husband has no rights to them. V'tilushin min ha-karka. But if they came into her, tilushin from the karka, then b'chnisata shela. Then they're hers. Because we said that when they tilushin, it considered like money. He doesn't eat from those fruit. However, b'tziyata shelo. But on the way out, if she has a fruit that already plucked from the ground, those fruit are considered the husband's. He eats them on the way out. As she says, "Ubisiyata shelo, demash kadam betras beodat tachtav zakeh be'midim perot nechsem elok." Which means, if he plucked them, let's say when she was still alive, now she died. Well, these were his already, because bottom line, he was zocher to them at the time of the plucking. Therefore, they are his. So therefore, it's based on the shita of the hakamim, that stuff that's attached to the ground is considered his. Because bottom line, I don't care that it came into our possession when they were on the ground. It's not considered karka. Bottom line, he picks them. When he picks them, he's married to her. Therefore, they're considered his. This kind of shita will be repeated on the Amud Bet, and we'll say it again as well. Now the Gemara is going to discuss different properties or different items that are proper to spend the money in order to get perot. Let's say the lady brought in money. Now you have a choice to buy a house, or you have a choice to buy a tree. So the question: what's the better investment? The Gemara tell you the better investment where. So the Gemara says peshita ara ubate. If it's a choice of just a real estate, a piece of property where you can plant, ubate or houses, ara, you buy land. It seems that the houses will depreciate over time, but the karka is able to work and able to get better. So it's the advantage of the husband and to the wife. Because the husband is going to get more perot, and the wife will keep her principal. So that was ara ubate, ara. Bate v'dekle. Buying a house or declare. Declare is trees. Okay? Date trees, palm trees. Gemara says, bate. And houses are better. Because the trees, they could dry up, and therefore you lose the principle. But the houses, they're more stable. Now, declare v'ilane. If it's a choice of a deke, which is a palm tree, or ilane, a regular tree, declare. You buy the palm tree. Why? Because the tree does not regenerate. But shaking a palm tree, it regenerates. So therefore, it's more of a sturdy item. Now, ilane v'gufne. If it's a choice between a regular tree or grapevines, ilane. Then you buy the ilane, because it seems the grapevines, they dry up, and therefore you can lose the whole item. So therefore, they're giving you choices. Bottom line, the rules we just said over here, what is considered the more durable item? That's all it is. And it's going to last the longest time. And the point is, it's saying that let's say the one of the two wants to buy the wrong item, the other one can object. Right? For example, let's take the first case. We said land is better. Let's say the wife goes, I want to buy the house. The husband can say, no. It's not to my advantage that you buy a house when there's land available. I'd rather we buy the land, and because you're ruining my perot angle. Or the opposite. Let's say the husband says, buy the house. She'd come along and say, no, this is my principal over here. You're affecting me. I'd rather buy the item that the principal's going to be more stable. And they will both have rights to object in order to buy the more durable item. And now the Gemara gives another rule over here. Abba zardata. You have a forest of trees that produce zardata. Sorb trees. That's like a sour apple trees. Upirat de chavre. And there's a pond of fish. Those are the two items we're discussing now. The discussion over here is, how do you look at it? Which is, you look at it, see a pond of fish. Do you consider the ground of the pond itself, the karka, that's the principle, and the fish, pirot. Now, if you look at it like that, then his husband could just eat the fish. And I'm not worried if he eats all the fish. Because bottom line, you're not ruining her principle. Because the principle is the ground of the... Or do you say, no, since these things don't regenerate, that maybe the whole thing is considered principle. Same thing with the forest trees. The forest trees, well, the ground is hers. So, and the trees themselves. So do you say, let the husband eat pirot, and because you're not ruining the ground and the tree itself, or do you consider the whole forest itself principle? That is the question. So the Gemara says like this, Amri la pira, some look at the fish and the trees as fruit that the husband could benefit, the Amri la karna, and some look at the whole situation as principle. Now look at Ashi. Look at Ashi on the three lines on the bottom. Amri la pira. Imnafnu la birusha. If they felt are in a Yerushari's item, let's say the forest, kitzitzat ha'etzim, right, the cutting of these trees, v'dagim shema'afiran, these fish, hu piryan. One shita says, that's the peri. The husband can get the wood, and she's keeping the karka. Ve'akarka, hu keren. Ve'amri la, and some say, no, kulehu avikarna. The whole thing is considered principle. Why? Hu'il v'ayetzim v'dagim kalim. But after a while, you're going to give all the trees don't go back. Then we can give the trees to the husband. That's it. She lost the trees. So maybe you consider that item all now principal. So that's the she'ilah. How do you classify these two situations? Is the fish and the trees perot? Then you give them to the husband. But where's the keren? The keren would be the ground under it. Or do you say, no, since these items, if he's going to take all these fish, there's no more, there's any more fish. And there's not going to be any more trees because they don't grow. So therefore it's all considered principal. So we get what our answers. You want to know the rule when it comes to this? Giz'om mahlif pira. If the trees regenerate, that's considered perot. And giz'om mahlif karna. But if they don't regenerate, it's not considered perot. If it's considered keren, because bottom line, she's losing the item now. There's no more trees. So therefore, we consider all keren. Now, what could you do in that case? You could sell the whole item and buy a field and go back to the regular rule of perot. But the husband cannot come along and say, well, the trees don't regenerate. Hey, listen, you have the ground over there. Huh? Just give me these trees. I'm going to run out of trees. These trees don't grow back. Therefore, it's all considered keren if they do not regenerate. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Amar Lila, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, Amar Rabbi Yanai. Hagonev Vlad Behemat Milog. Okay, let's get the case over here. Lady brings it to a marriage, Behema. Okay. And now what happens? The Behema has a child. So that's considered, we assume that the actual mother animal is considered the kid in the principle. The baby that comes out is considered pirot. Okay? So we assume we consider it pirot. Now a ganav, a thief from somewhere else comes along, he steals the Vlad of the behemat milog. Okay. Now, off the bat, he has to pay kefil. A thief has to pay double. Who does he pay the double to? Now, we would assume, just thinking straight, well, if the perot belonged to the husband, he stole perot, the husband should get the double payment. You would not say that. Mishalem tashlum kefil leisha. Wow. Now, what's the logic? So at this point that she says, second line, Le'isha velo le'ba'al. Kasal kadatach de kasabar en avaldot peri ela keren. Vilkah ben karka de haishin an shema tamuta'em v'yichle keren. Which means maybe I look at it like this. When you're dealing with an animal, there's a chance that the animal could die. Correct. Now, if the animal dies, the mother dies. So there goes the whole keren. So in items like that, we don't consider the fruit, because we said the only time you consider fruit is when he gets fruit and the keren remains intact. But if the keren, which is like a field, the field remains intact and he eats fruit, that's okay. Eat all the fruit you want because the field remains intact. Mashikin here, we're not going to give the guy the perot. Because she can end up losing everything. If this animal dies, it's over. So then we consider the whole thing hers. The whole thing is considered keren. And therefore, if somebody steals it, it's really to the wife, the kefir. That's what the Gemara is assuming at this point. Comes to Gemara and analyzes now. Keman, who's this going like? They tell me the animals are considered the wives. It's not going like any of the following two opinions. Netanya, Vlad behemat milog. Good. If the Vlad of a behemat milog. That's the offspring of this behemat milog. Lebaal. First opinion says what? It belongs to the husband, like a regular pirot. Vlad shefchat milog. Oh, but if it's a shefcha that she brought into the marriage, the child of the shefcha milog leisha. That belongs to the wife. The Hananya ben Achi Yoshaya Amar, and Hananya comes along and says, "Asu vlad shefcha milog, kevlad behemah milog." That both the shefcha's child and the animal's child is the husband's. But according to everybody in this braita, vlad behemah is the husband's. So why are you telling me you paid a kefil to the wife? Gemara comes along and says, "Afilu tema devre akol." Everybody will agree to this case. Why? Pira tiknu lerabbanan. The rabbis, what advantage do they give the husband? Pirot. He gets to eat the fruit. For example, the animal itself is considered pirot. The animal is his. The mother is the keren, that's the wives. He gets to eat fruit. What's fruit? The child, the offspring. However, pira de pira lo tiknu lerabbanan. The fruit of the fruit, the rabbis did not give the husband. Kefil is the fruit of the fruit.
Right.
Because the fruit is the offspring of the mother. Now that offspring is producing fruit. What's that? The double payment of kefir. That's not his. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Perot, yeah. What's the perot? The offspring. That's already perot. That's the first level of perot. Now this peri, by the fact that it got stolen, produces now profit. Because now, you get double. You get double. So therefore, since that's the payment of kefil, so the deen is peri tiknu rabbanan, but not pera de peri. We should point out what was mentioned. That the Tosfot points out that we said that the kefil goes to the isha, because the kefil is considered pira de pira. That's the fruit of the fruit. But she'ekin, the principal, the first payment, goes to the husband, because bottom line, his animal got eaten up, got stolen. Therefore, he gets to reimburse. That's petty. But the kefil, the isha. Now, the Gemara says, Bishtama la Hananya. Hananya is the opinion that said that all the perot, whether it's the shifha's children offspring or the animal's offspring, they considered the husband's. That's considered perot. So he's consistent. And what's the shita based on? Hainu delo haishinan lemita. He doesn't suspect that the mother animal is going to die. So therefore, the husband can eat perot without affecting the principal. And therefore, just like he's not suspecting that the mother shifcha is going to die, he's not suspecting the mother animal is going to die. So that goes with our rules. That as long as the keren is intact, that the husband gets to eat the perot. However, the ilan banan, well, the rabbis were a little tricky because they split the ticket over here. They said when it comes to shifcha, the shifcha is considered, the vlad of the shifcha is considered the wives. But when it came to the vlad of the animal, it's considered the husband's. Well, are you choshesh to mita or not? If you're choshesh to mita, you have to choshesh across the board. If you're not choshesh to mita, across the board, how can you split the vlad of the shifcha to the wife and the vlad of the animal to the husband? So the Gemara analyzes. If you're suspecting what? That the mother dies. So suspected even by the offspring of the animal. And then it should go to the wife. Now, look, if you're not suspecting to mita, so afilu vlad shifhat milog nameh. So therefore, that should always go to the husband, which means b'mar afshach. So the Gemara says, le'olam hayshinan l'mita. According to Hachamim, we are choshesh to mita. We are choshesh that the mother shifha is going to die, and we are choshesh that the mother animal is going to die. But so what? V'shari be'ma di'ika ora. But when the animal dies, she doesn't lose out everything yet, because she still gets the benefit from the skins. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what's the rule? So long as the principle is kayam, the husband gets to eat the perot. It's not like money. Money, if the husband's going to start eating the money, there's nothing. He's eating into the principle. I really choshesh, the mother animal might die. But so what? Even if it dies, she still has keren. Mm-hmm. But if the mother shifcha dies, what's the keren? You can have the skin of the shifcha. So therefore, that's already principle. And therefore, when it comes to the shifcha, you have to choshesh the mita. Therefore, the whole thing, mother and child, is considered principal. Mashiach, by animal, the death of the animal still supplies arot. Therefore, it's considered the shifcha, the velot go to the husband. Amar avuna barchaya, amar shuan halakha, ke hananya. Okay, in halakha follows hananya. There's no difference between the vlad of the shifcha and not those between the vlad of the animal, not Hoshesh Lemita, according to Hananya, and therefore both are considered Perot. Amar Abba, Amar Av Nachman, Afagav, Amar Shimon HaKaka Hananya, even though he said other guys like Hananya, Mode Hananya. Hananya's Mode, She'im Nidgarsha. Let's say they got divorced. Notenet Damim Venotaltan. She pays money and takes them. Takes what?
The Perot.
No? The Perot. Which Perot? That she takes zachab veladot shehem kiperot tedushim, or the children of the shifchara. She says, why? Mepenesh shevach bet aviha. A new principle. Shevach bet aviha is the praise of a father's house. She's like this. It's a praiseworthy thing that she came into this marriage and she inherited shifahot. That's like a status symbol over there she got from her father. Mm-hmm. Now, normally, okay, as long as they're married, the law is that the husband gets the children. That's the rule. The work of the children, whatever that means. Right? The pirot belongs to the husband. He gets the benefit from them. However, the Gemara is saying a hadush. At the time of divorce, she has rights to come along and say, those pirot that are yours, I'm buying them from you. Because mm-hmm. there's a concept of that's like an heirloom item. She's proud that the father gave her these shifarot, so she has rights at the time of the divorce to buy back the pirot. That's all the Gemara says. Because shvach betabiya. Amar Abba, Amar Av Nachman. Hichnisa lo ez lechelba. Let's say she went into the marriage, she inherited and as a goat for the milk. V'rachel gizata. Or a sheep for its shearings, v'tanegolet lebetzata, or a chicken for the eggs, v'deke leperotav, or a tree for its perot. Ochel ve'olech ad shetechle akeren. Interesting. He's able to eat all these items even if it wears away the principle, which means he's going to wear away the goat. He's going to wear away the chicken, the tree. Now I thought we had a rule over here. I thought we said if you wear away the principle, then the whole thing belongs to the lady. You don't give her the perot. So that she says over here, I'm not worried. Even if the animal, if the goat dies, you wear it out, so what? She still has principle. What does she have? She has the hide. Even if the chicken dies, she still has the feathers. Whatever she's going to do with the feathers. What is she going to do with the dried up tree? She has the wood. And the rest is perot, which means the eggs keep on coming every day. The first is considered perot, which means that's considered an item that's produced. That's the normal way of benefiting from these items. So therefore, even though, let's say, by benefiting from these items, it's going to wear away the principle, but even if the principle gets worn away, there's still something that always remains. Amar Rav Nachman, Aila legilima. Let's say she brought it, she got into the marriage, she inherited the gilima, a jacket, a coat. So what's the perot of a coat? Pira havi mechsebe. The perot are usage, wearing it. Pira havi. Mechsebe v'azil ad dechalia. Until it wears out. It's wearing out. What do you mean? She's losing her principle. No. Keman ki aitana. This is following the opinion that says that what? Because bottom line, when it wears out, she still has skins there. She still has the coat. Goes better than leather, let's say. So even if it's worn out, then she can't wear as a coat anymore, but there's still value. It doesn't depreciate totally, and therefore, he gets to use the coat. Like the following tana that said, Hamelach ve'achol. Let's say she brings the inheritance, let's say a quarry of salt. Not a quarry, actually. It's like by the ocean, there's like a ditch in the ground where the salt water goes in, and then the sun hits the salt water. It dries it up, and now she has, let's say, the ground underneath with the salt inside. Now what's going to happen? If he eats all the salt doesn't regenerate.
No.
And therefore, the question is, how do you look at that? Does she own the whole salt mine with the salt, or could the husband eat the salt and we'll look at it and say, well, she has bottom on the ground. The ground of the quarry doesn't go anywhere. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Hamelach v'achol. Hol is like sand for building. Hareze perot. It's considered perot. Why? Because since the ground is always there, the ground of the where the salt is, that's the karka.
In the pit.
Even though the salt itself doesn't regenerate, similar like the coat doesn't regenerate, but bottom line, the coat, the skin is still there. Similarly, when the salt doesn't regenerate, but the ground is still there. Now, pir shel gofrit, that's what a sulfur pit. Mahporet shel tzrif, that's a pit of alum. It's a type of herb. Rabbi Meir Omer Keren, Vachamim Omerim Perot. How do you look at that? Let's see the Machloket. Pir Gofrit, Rabbi Meir Omer Keren. He says, bottom line, you need all the sulfur doesn't regenerate. So sell the whole item, buy field, she keeps the field into perot. The other rabbi comes along and says, perot. Why? Look at that she. Because again, he looks at the sulfur. I know the sulfur doesn't regenerate, but there's the ground there. The ground is us. And therefore, let him finish the sulfur till it's finished. She said, "Priyo v'derech harato v'adin gedima." So too, when it comes to a coat, v'lodamu nekesafim. Doesn't that similar to money? Because once he eats the money, they're not left over for the lady. Therefore, you sell it. Masheikah, the coat, use it up. It cannot be worn anymore. But just not something left over. So too, if he ate all the sulfur, but what? The ground is still there. So therefore, you see that he has the same law. Last point to the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon omen makom shiyafek kohom. Last point. We said in the Mishnah, we had a Shitav Hakamim and Rabbi Shimon. Both agreed that when a lady inherits a field with perot on the field already, when perot are on the field, those are considered the husband's. Those are considered perot, even though technically they were attached to the field. So they came in belonging to her because it was on the field and the perot were on the field. It's considered perot. Why? Because they say he goes after the harvest. When are you plucking these fruit? When you're plucking them already, they're by the husband's already. Because already it's in the marriage already. So at the time of the plucking, at the time of the harvest, they're his. So therefore, even though it came in, they didn't grow in his jurisdiction. But so long as it's going to be plucked in his jurisdiction, they're considered perot. Therefore, what happens in this case? She got married. Inheritance, boom, there's a field filled with wheat. Hakamim say that wheat is considered perot. Even though when it fell in already made. The field with fruit, doesn't matter. You're harvesting it, right? Time of harvesting, when we're married already. That's in my jurisdiction. Therefore, he gets the perot. Now, Rabbi Shimon basically echoed the same point. So the Gemara says, what's the nafkamina between Hachamim and Rabbi Shimon? Both are saying it goes after the harvest. So the Gemara says, there's a nafkamina. Rabbi Shimon, hanu tanakama. Amar Rabba mechubarin b'shat yitzia ika benayu. A case that the Mishnah did not discuss. Mechubarin b'shat yitzia. Let's say that they got divorced, and at the time of the divorce, there was still stuff attached to the ground. So Rabbi Shimon's going to say, if it's still attached to the ground, he didn't harvest them yet. Goes after harvest, so it's considered us. Hakamim's going to say, no, you didn't harvest it, doesn't matter. Which is Hakamim Alini, they play both sides. They say it's always advantage husband. Which means, when it falls into the marriage, when they're married, it goes after the harvest. Advantage husband. Now when it comes after the divorce, it goes after, perot bottom line. It goes from now. And therefore, either way, Hakim is going to be lenient more than Rabbi Shimon. On the divorce, where there's perot in the field already. Hakim is going to say, both ways it goes to the husband, where according to Rabbi Shimon, he says, no. It goes after the harvest, and therefore, it goes to the lady in this case. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen.